Hello and welcome to the Sobremesa podcast. I have Deborah Madden with me today, or back again on the podcast, to talk about Spain's new abortion law. So can you just tell us what you've been up to recently and you know, what you're researching and where?
Yeah, absolutely. So my current project focuses on sexual violence in contemporary Spain. So I've been working through a lot of feminist archives, and I've found like ample materials about the history of the pro-choice movement, particularly in Spain, and the significance of abortion laws and how it interconnects with feminist rights. So this got me really interested in historicizing these political shifts that we've been looking at very recently. So of course, as you mentioned, just yesterday, we've got approvals and modifications to the existing abortion law, the 2010 Sexual and Reproductive Health Law, which allows for elective termination up until the first 14 weeks of pregnancy. And I wanted to historicise a lot of these tensions in terms of how it's so demarcated politically in Spain, for example, with the right consistently pushing for much more restrictions, as we've seen in countries such as the US and Poland, and then the left's representation and the characterization of the pro-choice movement, and argumentation for legal abortion in Spain. So that this is sort of what the direction that my research has been taken in accordance with these political developments.
I mean, it's a historical thing all over the world at the minute. I mean we've got like going backwards on is it Roe versus Wade in America?
Absolutely.
And what was the other one? And you mentioned earlier as well, you know, Ireland and
absolutely. So what we've got at the minute is this global dialogue about abortion has completely exploded. So on the one hand, we've got extreme pushback in countries like Poland and the USA. And then we've also got countries like Ireland and throughout Latin America, as we've seen through this so-called green wave feminist movement. Like we saw even yesterday in parts of Mexico, abortion access had been improved just yesterday. So we've got this constant conflict between the pro-life and pro-choice movements that's really being galvanized at the moment. And what's really interesting about Spain is that it can almost function as a microcosmos for this pro-life, pro-choice conflict, as I say, for the simple reason that on the one hand, while we have, as you said, as we've mentioned, seen developments to the abortion legislation, which we'll talk about the specifics of in a moment, there's also been consistent backlash and pushback from the right. So as recently as 2013, 2014, when the Conservative People's Party were in power, they proposed plans for extremely conservative abortion legislation that very much resonates with what we're seeing in the United States and in Poland, which, as we know, was essentially put on the back burner, as it were, thanks to the feminist freedom train protests, where there was huge marches throughout the country, culminating in a mass protest in Madrid in order to defend abortion rights. So this notion of abortion as a right and a legal option that can be very quickly taken away, which seems to have come as some surprise to people looking at the United States or Poland. You know, it came as no surprise to those of us who understands abortion politics in Spain, because it's got such a complex history in the country.
So this recent law, just to make listeners aware that there are several pieces of legislation going through Parliament at the moment that are being promoted by the Ministry of Equality, Irene Montero, who is the minister for that ministry. But this law has passed. This is the abortion law, and they're currently debating the only yes is yes, solo sí es sí, which is more related to gender violence, prostitution, and other aspects of sexuality. Which, if you want to know more about the history, you can listen to mine and Deb's old episode on this, which I still think is very much up to date, and it's just called Gender Violence. So take a look for that if you're interested. But we're going to be talking about the abortion law today. So Deb, can you tell us a bit about, you know, the history of the abortion, well, the very hot topic that is abortion in Spain, you said it goes back to before Franco times, to me a minute earlier. So can you just give us a bit of an outline?
Indeed, it does. We can trace back as early as 1927 a pro-choice pamphlet that defends so-called therapeutic abortion written by a gynecologist in response to the amount of women he was seeing being extremely injured or indeed killed as a result of illegal terminations. And then in the late 1920s, early 30s, 1928 and 1933, we've got these anarchist conferences about sexual liberty and sexual identity and bodily autonomy, in which proposals were put forth for legal abortion in Spain. So this is, you know, some of the very, very early early arguments in favour of legal abortion in the country. Now, we may not know that one of the world's first abortion laws was actually introduced in Spain in anarchist-ruled Catalonia in 1936, of course, as we know, during which point we've got the civil war raging.
Yeah.
And then understandably, regrettably, as soon as the nationalists take power, they immediately make reforms to the penal code to make this more complicated to access. And then in 1941, we've got the introduction of the so-called birth law. So this is like what we saw in Hitler's Germany or Mussolini's Italy in terms of promoting childbirth and banning any form of contraception or abortion at all costs. And then we have abortion as a clandestine, yet nevertheless extremely common experience up until 1985, when we have the introduction of the of the organic law.
Really? 1985? I mean,
1985, yeah. 10 years after the dictator's death, 10 years after the dictator's death.
Yeah, yeah.
And as we can see with the, you know, the ongoing conflict that we're seeing within the country, was a hugely contentious piece of legislation.
What would people do, though, before 1985 if they wanted to, like, I suppose... It's common to the argument, right, in America, like, rich women can afford to fly to a state that allows abortion, but poor women can't. So what was it like back then for women, like before 1985?
Well, on the one hand, there was female-led networks that facilitated illegal abortions, the so-called Carmen method, which is effectively a surgical, i.e. using tools rather than medication,
yeah,
in order to terminate pregnancies. From roughly the 1960s onwards, when Spain, you know, opens up the so-called apertura of late feminism, there's also connections between Spanish women and abortion networks in the Netherlands and in the United Kingdom. So huge documented cases of women traveling for abortion care to London and indeed to the Netherlands when it was illegal in the country. And very interestingly, in around the 1970s, Spanish judges tried to criminalize women's activities in the United Kingdom and the Netherlands. Jesus. So they tried to present the fetus as a Spanish citizen that had been murdered, quote unquote, of course, overseas by its mother.
Wow.
In order to, you know, in order to even restrict abortion travel. And we saw similar stuff in Ireland, actually. I remember there was a case of a teenage girl who traveled from Ireland before the 2018 reform, before the repeal the eighth was passed, who traveled to the United Kingdom for an abortion, and the Irish government and police forces tried to inhibit that. So it's
Jesus.
Something, you know, we tragically see throughout different geographical areas.
Yeah, and for a long time as well, right? I mean,
absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Well, the big irony of abortion, if we look at it historically in Spain, is so in 1936, in Catalonia, where, as I mentioned, this is characterized by anarchist ideals, as the other side of the coin that allows for abortion was also improving health and well-being for mothers, fathers pulled the weight, communities worked together. Abortion was barely recorded in the hospitals that allowed for it at that time. And then, tragically, under Francoism, there's huge records of illegal abortion because contraception's unavailable. And as we know, we also have the long periods of hunger, the so-called años de hambre in the 1940s and 1950s, which, of course, you know, made it even more difficult for people to bring children into the world. So, you know, they often say, you know, restrictive abortion legislation just stops safe abortion. It doesn't stop abortion. But ironically, in Spain, we actually saw an increase as to when it had been legal, because the other circumstances about quality of life, relationships, sexuality, sexual health were all decimated under Francoism.
Wow. And so as well, abortion is highly, like many countries, is a highly political issue. But in Spain, it's kind of polarized between the left and the right. Can you talk a bit about the 1985 law and what's been the build up to yesterday's approval?
Okay, so in 1985, we've got the establishment of the so-called organic law that allows for abortion in extremely restrictive cases. So in cases of rape, fetal so-called abnormality, and its severe risk to the woman's health. Now, this was extremely contentious, and the fact that the left, particularly the communists, effectively saw it as selling out because abortion on demand was not legalized, whereas the right saw it as a huge abomination against family life that they supposedly, apparently, attempt to defend. So from then on, we've got, as you say, pro-life organically identified with the right-wing parties, and we still see that in terms of the Populares, the PP and Vox, and the left with a more pro-choice attitude. Now, what's interesting about the socialists is they've always tried to strike a balance. So it was a socialist majority that passed the 1985 law, and they attempted to navigate a compromise, if you like, between both antagonistic positions, unlike, for example, in Italy. So after the fall of the dictatorship in Italy, it was roughly, according to Mor Brach anyway, accepted across all political parties that some form of legal abortion was deemed necessary in a democratic country, whereas in Spain, that's certainly not the case. So we eventually, in Spain, have elective abortion on demand, as it were, legalized in 2010 under the sexual and reproductive health law. That makes abortion legal for the first 14 weeks of pregnancy on demand, and then 21 weeks in terms of health concerns. Now, nevertheless, even though we've got this seemingly effective function in law, recent studies have shown that it's not effective in terms of the way in which it's realized throughout the country. So for example, 85-88% of terminations are carried out in private clinics, which is obviously an obstacle to poor women. There's certain geographical regions within the country that have no abortion on record for up to 5 years, with women having to travel to Madrid or Barcelona. Again, it's all very well if you've got the money and the resources and the time to do that.
Yeah.
You know, a disabled woman in a rural part of the country with not a lot of financial means is not going to have that same luxury. So this is really what the current reforms are in response to. And one reason for many of these, one reason that, you know, abortion, even though it's perfectly legal, has been difficult to obtain is the question of conscientious objection. So we've mentioned what's happening globally, which of course is a huge component of what's happening in Spain and vice versa. Now, as we've seen in Chile, for example, in Italy, conscientious objection makes it really difficult for women to obtain abortions within the public health care system. And this is something that...
is this where the doctors can refuse to carry out a procedure because they're religious? Ah, okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So what we've got now is...
even though they might carry out in a private clinic after... that, which is, it has been reported, right?
Absolutely. And the reason it's such a tricky issue is it sort of gets to the heart of this question of, you know, civil liberties and what doctors need to provide, and then, you know, this personal conflict. So the way that the updates that we saw yesterday have attempted to respond to this have got a registry of medics, and basically who, if they are identified as medics who provide abortion within the public healthcare system within Spain, they cannot then cite conscientious objection as a
so they can't change their mind, basically.
Effectively.
Yeah. No, that's makes sense. I mean, yeah, it's difficult to strike a balance, right, between
absolutely
rights, I mean, and freedom of choice.
Absolutely, and that's what makes it such a complex issue. And another area that theme, if you like, plays out is in relation to how one of the other developments is that now 16 and 17 year olds can
turn so this has been like heavily politicized by the new PP leader Fico, right? Because girls that are 18 can't buy alcohol, so they should ask, if they're below 18, they should ask for their parents' permission to get an abortion. But as I've seen someone else point out, I'm pretty sure it was in one of the newspapers, that mm-hmm. you can get married at 16 in Spain. So that completely, you know, kind of wipes off his claim that you have to be over 18, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is as well, fundamentally, as we've, you know, seen throughout history, the way in which the pro-choice arguments for legal abortion are characterized shifts and evolves. We either have socioeconomic concerns, which we saw in 1985, a more feminist expression, if you like, that we saw in 2010, or questions of affect, i.e. care and support for the pregnant woman, which is what characterized the Repeal the Eighth movement in Ireland. Now, for me personally, the crux of the issue is individual liberty, in essence. And yeah. I think this is why this parental consent stipulation being withdrawn is so important. And, you know, it goes without saying that, you know, not every 16, 17 year old has supportive parents or an opportunity to seek care effectively.
Maybe the ability to that sort of relationship, yeah, to talk to their parents about it, or maybe their parents are religious. I mean, there's so many different situations you can imagine.
Absolutely. Like, you know, it comes down to personal ethics, not the ethics of your parents.
Yeah, yeah. So there are quite a few different elements to this abortion law. I mean, there's obviously the right to access an abortion, which is now 16. You don't need your parents' permission. And they've also stated they want it to be close to the person's house and public, which, mm-hmm. as you said a minute ago, you know, it's a long history of people going to private clinics. They've also got rid of the 3-day reflection. What was this? And
so this is a paternalistic view of women, in which women apparently seek terminations thoughtlessly, and therefore needed a 3-day waiting period between the initial appointment and the termination being carried out, in order to think through the decision fully, obviously on the understanding apparently that the woman, you know, accidentally wandered into an abortion clinic thoughtlessly in the first place. We tend not to do that. So that is another critical components in terms of liberalizing the law, because you will have seen, we've spoken about, you know, the divide between the left and the right, but you will have seen that you know, the Hazte Oír group, which is roughly make yourself heard, so it's an ultra conservative think tank. It's also been working with pro-life organizations in the US in relation to the so-called heartbeat bills that we've seen in states such as Alabama and Texas. Well, Labour having vans outside of abortion clinics offering ultrasounds, and there was a medic involved that was a box,
Jesus.
The Bupala, or, you know, involved with the movement, in order to dissuade effectively women from having terminations. Because obviously, sorry, I'm just thinking, we're talking about, you know, these very recent laws, but it was a few weeks ago when it became criminalised for people to protest outside of abortion clinics. There was so-called buffer zones implemented.
Was that in the States or in Spain?
In Spain.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the so-called buffer.
Because that's a big thing in America, isn't it, as well? The right to protest outside abortion clinics.
Absolutely. And the UK as well.
And the UK, that's true.
I remember signing a petition for that when I was living in Manchester a couple of years ago. But so what they've taken to doing now is they've rented out buildings opposite abortion clinics, and have painted on the sides of the buildings, you know, these beautiful smiling babies, you know, you don't want to miss out on this smile, abortion is underway, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, because it's not, you know, individuals standing there holding posters, because it is, you know, painted onto a building that's been legally rented out or bought by these pro-life organisations, there's, you know, it's more difficult to resort to a legal recourse to avoid this. I don't know whether you've seen it, Alan, but there's a documentary that's on HBO at the moment, and it is called 12th and Delaware. So it's about the cross section where 12th Street meets Delaware Street in the state, where there's a pro life center opposite an abortion clinic in order to effectively like mislead women into going into the wrong clinic. And this is something that we've started to see now in Spain as well. Like facilitated by these ASPER organizations. So that's, again, that's, you know, as the law is becoming more liberal and recognizing the need for more flexible access to care, of course, partly due to the COVID-19 pandemic as well. When, you know, it wasn't necessarily simple to access a doctor. We've also seen, you know, the tactics on the pro-life side ramp up.
Yeah. And I suppose this is another thing that I don't think it's been heavily politicized yet, but I wouldn't be surprised that it is soon, is that there's going to be free access to sanitary products for for menstruation in schools, and also sexual education is going to be at different stages. That's has been politicized already by Vox when it comes to like the education of LGBT, right? But I don't think this is something that's come up so much yet. But also one thing that I think has been heavily politicized already, and it's quite big news internationally, is the you can be sick for if you're diagnosed as incapacitated by your period.
Yeah, absolutely. So another component of these updates to the abortion legislation is that, you know, as you say, the opportunity for women to take leave of absence from work due to period pains and related illnesses, which is going to be funded by the Seguridad Social.
So that was one of my questions, because state, like, sick pay in Spain is not the best. But it's kind of a strange era, because I know that since the credit crunch or 2008, sort of the crash, a lot of funcionarios had to get a baja for even like one day off sick. I don't know if it's going to change or how it's going to be managed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one to see how these things are going to play out in practice, because as mentioned, the 2010 law in theory looked perfectly functional. And then, as we saw, due to geographical, religious, financial barriers, that was not the case for many, many women throughout Spain. So, you know, again, we're going to see the extent to which this is practically feasible.
Yeah.
To facilitate these rights, basically.
But also surrogacy. They've banned ad campaigns for encouraging surrogacy as well. I think there's another component of it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And this is a really a relatively unique component of Spanish feminism. So whereas particularly in the Anglo world, we've got this conflict between so-called gender critical feminism and feminist movements that are much more conscientious about trans rights. In Spain, there's a huge focus on the practical components of the female body, which often leads to overlap, what in the Anglo world we often refer to as the so-called gender critical feminism. And one of the key ways that this is playing out in Spain is, as you say, in relation to surrogacy, with a huge backlash against it. I mean, I'm sure you've seen, I see it everywhere in Madrid, lots of protest posters that say things to the effect of, you know, we're not machinery, we're not goods to be bought. And yeah, I mean, of course, you what you don't want is the, you know, the commercial surrogacy that we've seen in the US, because that's, you know, extremely problematic, given all the power to those with the finances and means to purchase effectively, rent a womb.
Yeah. So as someone that's studying the history of this, and obviously, you know, studied the movements, the arguments for and against, what do you think of the overall law with regards to, you know, the days off for period pain, the lowering of the age to 16 without consent? You know, what are some of the most important things for you, do you think? And what sort of things do you think we should look out for in the future?
Well, in terms of the period law, I think that exemplifies how Spain is very often at the forefront of much of this, partly in relation to its long history of anarchism in terms of what that says about personal liberty and bodily autonomy, as mentioned in reference to the 1936 law. It's only a matter of time before similar pieces of legislation are introduced in other European countries.
Right.
I'm certain. You know, there's continuous pushback, for example, against tax and VAT on sanitary products, which is still something that's not quite being resolved in Spain, but it's something that Montero is certainly pushing. In terms of the legislation, more specifically in relation to abortion, on the one hand, I want to be incredibly optimistic that it's facilitating the abortion on demand that's theoretically been in law since 2010. It is putting power back into the hands of pregnant women rather than the state or the parents or the medics. But with an election due next year, with the Populares and with Vox having expressly made their pro-life position clear, over the next 2-3 years, depending on how the election results go, will define how abortion rights play out in Spain. I could very much see a right-wing coalition, for example, introducing legislation like what we've seen in the US and Poland. I mean, progress is not linear. So while on the one hand, you know, I think that these reforms are fantastic for pregnant people throughout the country, ask me again in 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much, Deb.
You're very welcome.